Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today, the day after Memorial Day. I hope everyone had a good long holiday and understands and remembers the veterans who made the ultimate sacrifice for the United States, for our nation, for us. I want to give a very special thank you for that. Wow. I've got a great show lined up for you today. This being Tuesday, May 26, 2020, of course. Out of the gate, I've got, Pastor David Berman. He's a pastor of a church in New England. And, I want to tell you something. The assault on churches right now are intense. As a matter of fact, if you caught a recent headline of The Blaze, I'm not so sure. We talked about this on Friday with Mancow, and I'm not sure if you saw this, but the Chicago pastor said that the mayor sent armed police in unmarked cars to bang on the church doors Sunday like it was Soviet-style KGB. What we talked about on Friday was the fact that she had threatened to do some things to churches, you know, shut them down, fine people, take license numbers, and had done similar things in the past. And of course, now on Sunday, she sent out this armed contingent to shut down the churches shut down one specific church in South Chicago. Now, at the time, I think this was posted, some 37 murders had already taken place in Chicago over the weekend. I'm not so sure if that's in this particular Blaze article or not. If it is, great. You can read it, of course, at The Blaze. But, right now, religious institutions all across Illinois and other states are banned from gathering in groups of over 10 people. And this in Illinois is under the state, that particular state's very strict reopening plan. Now, we believe, look, most of us believe that this is the right of churches. When you shut down churches, it is not akin to shutting down an amusement park, in my view. However, I mean, you've got freedom of religion and freedom of assembly. For example, there was discussion about, you know, shutting down or finding people who protest don't engage in the physical distancing, which, again, I refer to this as physical distancing. I don't like the phrase social distancing. Perhaps maybe I should use that phrase. But that, of course, is something that that was and I've gotten emails, and I had talked about this in previous programs. This phrase social distancing was actually developed back in 2006. So we're looking at a phrase that's 14 years old. But that aside, and that's a separate discussion altogether, and I suspect that this has a lot to do with the surveillance of individuals. When somebody says social distancing, that refers to being able to isolate specific cellular devices, phones, iPads and such, but really phones, and identify the people who are too close together. And of course, the contact tracing will be rolled out state by state, I believe. And the contact tracing, of course, will be the, again, this in my assessment will be the method under which the real tyrannical steps will be taken against us. But in the case of Lori Lightfoot, she attempted to make an example of this one church. In fact, it was Pastor Courtney Lewis. He was in the middle of delivering a sermon, and you can read this on The Blaze, this past Sunday when he heard loud banging on the church doors, and it was police sent by this mayor, Lori Lightfoot. Now, Lori Lightfoot, she is an African-American lesbian mayor of Chicago. Now, she's the one, by the way, that went out to the hair salon when everything was shut down, went out to a hairdresser, and had her hair done. And the excuse was, well, I'm the face of Chicago. I'm special. I need to have this done. It's essential for me to have it done. Personally, I'm not so sure that helped. As in my case, it wouldn't help. But that said, we're seeing a lot of tyrannical tin pot dictators that are really overtaking and overstepping their bounds and really attempting to quash freedom, all freedoms. Now, some of the headlines, for example, deep state profiles lockdown protesters as domestic terrorists. The method or the actual thing that's going on right now is if you go ahead and protest, for example, if you protest the lockdowns as unconstitutional, you're labeled as domestic terrorists. This is going through at the federal level, through the fusion centers. There's identifications being made and passed along to local police departments and fused with federal authorities as well. I got word on this. I got verification on this. And it's just the way it is, which is really making enemies of those people who are saying, look, we have a right to open our business. We have a right to gather, to assemble, to protest. You're a domestic terrorist. And we go through these phases, it seems like, semi-annually almost, ever since 9/11, with respect to Islam. Hey, you say anything about Islam, my goodness, you could actually be held as a domestic terrorist or be identified as domestic terrorist. The president's getting a lot of flack for his Twitter comments about Joe Scarborough. If you've seen this, well, I'm telling you, I think it's uncalled for, given the fact that anyone can say anything about President Trump. Anybody can say anything about anyone else. The president, of course, makes mention of the Lori Klozoudis death, in the office of Joe Scarborough. And of course, he's labeled a conspiracy theorist. People are saying he's spreading conspiracies. And I don't know if you noticed this, but the widow of Lori Klozoudis spoke out and sent a letter to Jack Dorsey asking Dorsey to ban or to somehow take action against the president. We're going to see how that turns out, because I think that's going to be a real important bellwether. And if you want to know the reaction of people, if you would happen to go out without a mask in snowflake territory. And I say that, not that I believe Staten Island snowflake territory. I believe it's occupied by a lot of snowflakes. If you happen to go out to a store without a mask, man, I'll tell you something, be ready for it. And I don't think there's anything more symbolic today of the divide in this country than this video clip. This was featured on Twitter. Again, I don't know how many people have seen this since the weekend or over this weekend. What's that? 7 million. Okay, 7 million people have viewed this. Let's take a look at this, and you're going to see the reaction to some. This is, let me set this up. This is a woman not wearing a mask in a store that's required. People are required to wear masks. This is the reaction of the people in the store, the bystanders, not employees, but the bystanders. So be prepared for more of this, which you're about to see. Oh, I think we're frozen there. Hang on just a second. Nope. A lot of screaming going on. I don't even know if we really have to play that. DOA on that? Hang on a second. We're going to refresh here. And I apologize for that. Speaking of apologizing, Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, said that she's never going to apologize for shutting down Michigan. And she doubles down on some things that people have said about her using fascist tactics and communist tactics, and her saying, no, saving lives. Yeah, okay. Crazy. But in the case of people in Michigan, in the case of the pastor in Illinois, they are asking the Department of Justice to step in and to fight for the constitutional rights. All right, let's try the let's try the video from the store on Staten Island.
Get out!
Yeah, grown ass woman that acts like a dirty ass kid.
Fucking dirty ass, huh? What do you think?
Fucking tree! Fuck shit!
Roll that one more time. I just want to show you, just if you don't mind, roll that one more time. Sorry. You know what? Then don't roll that. That's fine. If you watch the video, again, watch the reaction of the people who are coming against and fighting the, fighting against this woman, and watch the woman's reaction too. Pay very careful attention to what you're looking at. All right. Do we have David Berman? Okay. We have with me today, right now, we've got, Pastor David Berman. He's a pastor of a church in New England who believes strongly in constitutional rights. He's been with us before, actually. He's been on our program before. It's been a couple of years. Hang on. I'll get that. Sorry about that. I do that all the time. I don't silence the studio phones, but he's a pastor. In New England, and he's pro-constitution, and he's been very, very active and very vocal about what's going on. David Berman, how are you, sir?
Hey, how are you?
Good. Good. You're looking well. It's been a while since you were last on. What's that? What's it been? 3 years, maybe?
Yeah, 2 or 3 years, something like that.
Yeah. All right.
I was on with you. Yeah. We had a great time, a great hour show, and we're really discussing at the time, a lot of the wimpiness in the church, if I remember correctly.
Exactly. I was going through the old archives, which, in fact, folks, what I'll do is I'm going to put up a link to Dr. Berman's appearance. And yes, in fact, the do nothing churches at the time, I believe that was kind of how we characterized it. for those unfamiliar with who you are, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Just introduce yourself to the audience. Sometimes I don't go far enough. Sometimes I go overboard. So I'm going to leave it to you, if you don't mind, telling people about yourself and about your church.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm a pastor now was ordained in 1991. So I've been at this quite a while. Been guest on numerous radio shows. I mean, hundreds over the years, at least, and television shows have guest hosted for many people, including secular people like Howie Carr, for example. I filled in for him for 3 days one time, and I've been doing this for a long time. I'm a pastor. My main passion is to preach the gospel, of course, but also I'm one who has studied the Constitution and the founding documents, and my area of expertise is theology, but it's also worldview and how worldview affects culture and economics. And so I'm very well versed on these issues, the issues of liberty and the principles of liberty. And when I say the principles of liberty, I don't think your average person, including your average Christian, understands the principles of liberty. In other words, what were the founders of the nation saying when they wrote the Bill of Rights? What were the principles for that? Why is free speech an important thing? Why should we not have so-called hate speech legislation? Why would our founders be against that? That sort of thing. They don't understand that. Everybody today, everybody, not everybody, but you know what I mean, generally speaking, is just functioning on emotions. It's all emotions today.
Sorry
about
that.
There's no truth.
Yep.
It's okay. It's all emotion. And everything they think has to do with whether they think it's a good idea or not, not whether it's involved with the principles of liberty. This is a very, very important point. People believe that the government should do anything that it feels and they agree is a good idea. And that's not at all what the government can do. The government is only supposed to do what the Constitution allows it to do, because individually people don't get to decide what's a good idea for everybody else outside of the principles of liberty founded in the Constitution, or acknowledged in the Constitution, I should say, which are granted to us by God. So these are the very, there's a philosophical problem in our nation that most Christians don't even understand.
Interesting. Yes. Now, how, okay, if I can insert this here, you being a pastor, by the way, you're the pastor of Christian Life Fellowship.
Christian Life Fellowship.
And yeah. Tell people where that is precisely.
Christian Life Fellowship is located in Swansea, New Hampshire. That's the southwest corner of the state. I actually am the founder of this church. Before I pastored this church and founded this church, I worked with another pastor before that. We both he was the senior at the time and founded another church in Windsor, Connecticut at the time. And then I came up here and planted this church actually 24 years ago. And over that time, I've been ministering here. And as I said, been on television and radio and speaking engagements and such, trying to promote, first of all, the gospel, of course, but also trying to wake the country up, trying to speak prophetically to the country. And it has been a battle for 30 years, just about. The biggest battle for church.
The reason I asked you to set that up is to kind of find out whether whether you have been personally and your congregation has been collectively affected, impacted by this shutdown, whether you have had your freedom to worship, freedom to assemble, affected, impacted by this, and what you've done about this, and you know, your thoughts about all of this in the context, by the way, going back a couple of years, in the context of where what we were talking about a couple of years ago and where we were a couple of years, it seems like we're going backwards, right. But go ahead.
Oh, yeah. What I decided was, number one, I told the congregation, I'm not going to let the government shut us down. That's not going to happen. The government will not tell me when I can and cannot preach, will not tell me when I can and cannot open the church building. It's none of their business. Congress shall make no law. This is extremely clear. That means they have nothing to say about it. I told the congregation I would shut down the physical location along with the council of the elders if we felt it was the best thing to do for the people at the time with the information that we have. And so I'm not at all against any pastor or elders deciding in their given situation whether they should close down or not the physical location, because it's up to them to decide this. It's not up to the government, and that's the point. And so a couple weeks ago, after looking at the statistics and the new information, we opened the church up. I opened the church up 2 weeks ago, and we're actually having outdoor services right now as we watch the data and try to make the best decision from a health standpoint for our people. And that's the decision that's made. It has nothing to do with what the government says. Now, I did defy the law in doing that. I was preaching online, and publicly and boldly challenged the governor, telling the governor that of New Hampshire that he's in violation of the Constitution, and that we're going to have service, and if he wants to come with his men with guns and arrest me, he's welcome to do so. But I'm having service anyway.
What kind of reception did you receive? A response or reception at all, or reply? Nothing.
No, I was actually on the phone with the governor the week after, about 4 days after I made that challenge. I was asked by to join a conference call with 8 other pastors to speak with the governor. And in that conversation, I expressed to him, you know, the concern. I was very respectful to him. But no, he hasn't responded. No police showed up. I had told my people that if the police come to arrest me, let them arrest me. Don't do anything stupid. Just let them take me. Nobody did show up to arrest me. I did another service last Sunday. If nobody showed up either, we're very loud. We're outside, and I put it all over Facebook and social media because I wanted people to know we're having service. But I also wanted to do what Daniel did. As you know, brother, Daniel was commanded not to pray, and he could have prayed in his room in a closet where no one could see him. But instead, he opened the window. And he clearly did that so they could see him, because he was challenging the secular authority on their authority to tell him he can't pray to his God. So I did the same thing and put it on Facebook and Twitter and videos, and really made it very clear to the community and the area and to the powers that be that we are going to have church service. And I was fully prepared to be arrested. I told my wife, I said, you know, I'll probably be arrested. I don't really care. I told my elders, I said, you got to bail me out. And they said, well, if it's more than $10, we're not bailing you out.
it sounds about right. It sounds like you're.
Yeah, they're good guys.
Yeah.
you're playing with me. But, you know, I was fully prepared for that because what I see happening is what I said to you last time. We have passed, I'm of the opinion that this country could be turned around almost overnight if the church would wake up. I mean, I really believe that. There are millions of people that claim to be Christians.
Mm-hmm.
According to Barna research, 10% of Americans have a biblical worldview. Now, 10% is over 30 million people. What would happen if 30 million people actually started getting real? You turn the country right around. But they think they're going to turn around by politics. You know, if you elect Donald Trump, you're going to turn it around. You know, that's not going to turn it around, my friend. You know, he might put a, you know, put a dam against the flood for a little while on certain things, but it's not going to turn around because we have a deep rooted spiritual and philosophical problem. So my congregation knows what's going on. I stood up against the tyranny of the governor, made it very public, and he didn't do anything about it. Thankfully, I did not get arrested. But there are many churches that refuse to open up. They're afraid. Now, some churches might not be opening up because they did the same thing I did, where they said they don't feel comfortable yet, and that's between them and God and their congregation and their elders, right? And they can make that decision. I'm not talking about whether they feel comfortable about this health-wise or not. That's their decision. My problem is when you allow the government to tell you when and when you cannot have church. That's my problem. Not whether you shut down because you feel it's the best for your congregation, given the area you live in and the health concerns of that area, and you want to take a few, you know, a month off or whatever you decide to do, whether you agree with that decision or not is irrelevant because I don't have to agree with their decision. What concerns me is the kowtowing to a government that tells you that you have to shut your church down. And if I was in Chicago, I'll just tell you right now, if the police showed up at my door when I was preaching, I'd say, well, come on in and hear the gospel. And I keep preaching until they brought me to jail and keep preaching in jail. I'm not saying that in a boastful way. I'm just telling you that's just the way it is. And I think it's horrific that we've come to the point where we allow the government to shut down churches and arrest people and fine them and all this crazy. This is the stuff of China. It's insane. Any pastor that puts up with it, I don't know what to say. But we have a serious lack of fortitude, I'll put it that way, amongst preachers in this land. We have, for the most part in this land, we have a lot of hirelings that have a job. They see their job. They're concerned about losing their job. And that's their pastoral ministry. They're hired by the church, by the church board. They're told these are the parameters in which you can function. And if you don't, you're gone. Now, that's what happens when you're hired. See, I'm not hired. I'm sent by God as a man of God. You either receive me or you don't. I'm not going to tell you what tickles your ears. I'm going to tell you what the scripture says. And I'm going to stand up to tyranny. And that's just the way it's going to be.
Very good. Dr. David Berman, clfchurch.com. That's clfchurch.com. That's his website. And from there, you can get all of the various social network feeds, including Twitter and Facebook as well. So please bookmark that website. And by the way, if you're anywhere up in New England, it's not that far of a drive from where are you close to in terms of if people are listening to this, we'll say in Massachusetts or Connecticut or whatever, major city are you close to?
Well,
or would they know?
Well,
where
we wouldn't call anything up here, anything in New Hampshire, a major city, as you would think. But the city, the so-called city, is the city of Keene,
right? Okay.
Keene, New Hampshire, K-E-E-N-E, and that's about 26,000 people. And the church is actually in a small town just south of that, about 6,000 people. And we're about an hour and 40 minutes from Hartford, Connecticut, north, about 2.5 hours west of Boston, northwest of Boston. We're kind of in a rural area here. Okay. We're in a very, very, very liberal area.
A very liberal. Yeah, that's. I kind of figured that. I figured as much. One of the big reasons that I really wanted to have you on, especially now, and given and knowing your background, is this. I get emails all of the time, every day, and the emails are telling me, well, you know what? You've got a big mouth, me. I've got a big mouth, which is true. You talk big, but no one is doing anything proactive to combat, aside from talk, against this tyrannical, stuff that's going on by the governors and by the local leadership that we see taking place. And,
yeah.
So, well,
Go ahead.
I number one, I think really the ground zero in my belief is the are the churches, are the members, is the body of the church. Right. And I think that's where the ground zero is. And I guess one of the big thing is I'm frustrated, as most people listening to this are frustrated. We want to do something. So, what do we do? What can we do? What do you suggest we do?
And,
So go ahead.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we do. We did last 2 weeks ago. I was at the State House at a protest, and actually it was a kind of a it was a church service slash protest thing because we were illegal. Imagine gathering on the State House in Concord, New Hampshire, and I was preaching from the State House steps. And in fact, I think I'll send you a link to that so you have it in case you want to listen to it. But I was preaching about this. I'm preaching about tyranny and preaching about how the church has misinterpreted Romans 13 to think you're supposed to obey immoral orders. You are not. How do you fight it? You gather together and you make your voice heard. You do what the founders gave us, which was this idea of peaceful protest. So I'm not looking to be violent, but you peacefully protest. So, you know, I was there and there's about 300 people there for this service, and I preached and two other people preached. And when we did, I was thinking to myself, why isn't there 10,000 Christians here? Why isn't there 5,000 Christians here? Why are there only 300 people here? And you see, that's the real issue, because I guarantee you, if 5,000 people showed up on the State House, it would have made an incredibly powerful impact on the government here. But you get 300. And so the governor, who's a Republican, but he is not, in my view, of a conservative. I mean, he's pro-abortion. I'm not a Republican. I'm independent, by the way. But he's Republican, supposed to be conservative. He's pro-abortion. And he shut the state down. And I did say to him, appeal to him from the Constitution, but they don't care, my friend. So the only thing that they care about is power and money. That's all the politicians care about, with rare exception. And so the only way that you're going to affect them is to threaten their ability to be reelected. And the way you do that is to have peaceful protests en masse. But someone on Twitter said to me the other day, they said, why aren't pastors fighting? And I said, well, I am. And they said, well, you are. That's true. I said, but my problem is I have a hard time finding willing allies to fight alongside me. How many pastors did I see at that meeting that were, there was one or two pastors there that were, I think they were both retired. There might have been one other. I mean, you know what I heard at that rally most afterwards, after I spoke? There were numerous people that kept coming up and talking to me, and they were in shock. I mean, these people were in shock that a preacher of the gospel, a pastor, would have the guts to sit up there and say the things I said. I don't say that to you to boast. I'm just telling you what's happening. And let me tell you what else they told me. Numerous people told me they were extremely disappointed in their leaders. Many of them told me that. They said, and I've heard this online, people sending me messages, they're very disappointed because they've asked their pastors why they won't take a stand, and their pastors refuse to take a stand on this or much of anything else.
Right.
Because we're living in a seeker-sensitive gospel now. We're living in a time in which pastors are supposed to be in sync with the culture, and, you know, praise the culture and never stand up against the tide of leftism and liberalism and unbiblical and compromise of the scriptures. So when you do that, you're labeled, and the things that you're labeled, believe me, my friend, I'm called every name there is, and then I'm sure they make up some. So this is what you're going to. So I understand why pastors are. A lot of pastors are nervous about standing up there because they're going to take heat.
Yep.
But this is what I remember. This is what Jesus said. Jesus said, be weary when all men speak well of you. And I will tell you that living in the day we're living in now with the culture we have, if you're a pastor and everybody speaks well of you, you're probably not doing your job.
Wow. So we're both doing our job then. Jobs then.
Indeed. Yep.
All right.
Right.
That's okay.
Brother Doug, you want people are going to say people are going to say, oh, I love Doug when Doug is exposing evil. No, they're going to hate you, my friend. They hate you, my friend. They hate your guts because they're enemies of the cross.
Yep.
I'm not trying. You know, I feel like preaching. I'm going to try to control myself, but they're enemies of the cross. They are enemies of God. They hate Jesus Christ of the Bible. They'll say, oh, I know we don't hate Jesus. I'm talking about the Jesus of the Bible, not the one they made up. And they hate the guts of every gospel preacher who will challenge them on these things. And they hate your guts, brother, because you'll stand up there and say things they don't want to hear. These people are the nastiest, leftists are the nastiest people on earth. They are, from the very basis of their fiber of their being, they believe in the collective. And the collective is to be forced. And Doug, you will comply or else. And Pastor Berman, you will comply or else. That's how these people are. They don't believe in peace. They don't believe in rights. They don't believe in freedom. They believe in totalitarianism. And that's what they're doing. While the church sits on its backside and preachers are afraid to stand up. Frankly, it's sickening.
It is. Very sickening. And I'm really having a hard time both articulating my position here at this point, I guess because of the immense frustration I feel. And I know that you're out there, you're preaching, you're not affected. As you stated, you're not affected. By the way, the decisions you made with respect to your church, you made them in conjunction with your elders and said, this is how we're going to do mm-hmm. things. And if the government right. doesn't like it, so what? And I respect that.
Right.
And that's the way it should be, as in whether you're a church or whether you're running a business, small business or whatever. And, period. But I'm frustrated because I'm seeing this again, what we talked about, a lot of talk, a lot of people, you know, with microphones or a lot of people just frustrated out there in the, the very people who send me emails are the very people who will wear face masks. Make sure that they're standing, you know, following the directions, because we conservatives are very, very law abiding and very, you know, respectful of others. We really are.
Right. Right.
So, you know,
I would say my perspective, Doug, is that if you want to wear a mask because you decide to, that's your business.
Right.
Like, I mean, free country, you can wear a mask, you can wear a bodysuit or a hazmat suit for all I care. I don't care. It's your business. That's not the issue to me. The issue to me is that complying because you're afraid of the government.
Right. Right.
You don't have to wear a mask on your face, covering up your face, if you don't want to.
Right.
And if the government has no scientific studies to show this works anyway. I mean, all they do is arbitrarily say, do this, do that, based on executive orders, which are not law. And let me, again, for your listeners, I do really want to point to the 14th Amendment.
Thank you.
Which says this: no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property. Life, liberty, or property. Now, on the life issue, that's the abortion thing. We're not going to talk about that right now. But let's talk about the liberty and property point of it. No person shall be deprived of their life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So you're a businessman. You own a little coffee shop, let's say, and they come to you and they say, shut your coffee shop down for 2 months. You go out of business. That is your property. You could sell that business to someone else. That is a property. They are depriving you of your property. They're depriving you of your finances without due process of law, based on an edict from the executive branch with no law whatsoever. And so when they say you're supposed to follow the law, well, I say, what law? There's no law that's been passed that says I can't have church. I wouldn't follow it anyway. Well, where's the law? So these are edicts from the executive branch that are taking away people's liberty and their property without due process of law. And so people say, well, but it's an emergency. Well, you think there were no emergencies during the time when the Constitution was written? You think there were no epidemics? There were no sicknesses? Your rights are not suspended based on a virus. Now, in my opinion, what the government should have done was they should have said, remember in the beginning, they said we need to flatten the curve because the hospitals are going to be overwhelmed. Now, if the government said to me, if they came to me and they said, Pastor, we're asking you to do us a favor, could you consider, in conversation with your elders and congregation, closing down for 2 weeks? We're not forcing you. We're asking you to give us 2 weeks to get the hospital ready. I probably would have said yes.
Sure.
I probably would have said, you know, I'm a cooperative guy with the information we have. You need us to help you out for a couple of weeks? I can't say for sure, but I probably would have said okay. I probably would have said, you're asking me. let me pray. Let me seek the Lord. Let me talk to my elders. We want to be cooperative to help with the community. If this is something we can do to help, you know, that's what they should have done. They should have done that to everybody. Would you help us out for 2 weeks?
Right.
But no, you shut down. You do what we tell you, or we're going to penalize you by the power of the government gun. That's the definition of tyranny and totalitarianism. And no pastor should ever, ever give into that. Right? And frankly, no business should. No business should.
Are we going
to? I'm not going to give the businesses off. I'm not going to give these guys a hard time because, you know, they're between a rock and a hard place. But if I owned the business, I would have said, I'm sorry, I'm not closing down.
Well, it goes to my earlier point. You know, if one person shuts down or if one person does not comply with the order to shut down, we'll say, and it's an illegal order. But if one person does not comply, they get fined, they get thrown in jail. People make an example of them. But if we all got together, if every person who owned a brick and mortar business said, you know what, if Walmart can stay open, apparently that we got a smart virus. It, you know, it doesn't affect Walmart. It doesn't affect Costco. I don't know, but it's a mystery. But, you know, if we had all the small businesses, if every business owner said, you can't tell me to shut down. You can't tell me I'm not essential. And if we all just said no, what are they going to do? Throw us all in jail? Take away all of our licenses? I don't think so.
I think they're very clever though, aren't they, brother? Well, because they said, look, you know, here's the situation. We got this horrific virus coming and you see all the pictures from Italy, and anyone, myself included, got very concerned. I mean, I don't want anybody I know getting sick. I don't want to catch this thing if it's as bad as they're saying. I don't want nothing to do with it. So they said, look, we tell the businesses, if we need like freaking 2 or 3 weeks to flatten the curve. A lot of businesses that would hurt terribly, but probably most businesses probably could have survived, would have been tough and maybe survived that. But once you close down, you see, now they got you all closed down. There's no organization to reopen. And now they got you because they were clever. They said, there's a virus and it's the end of the world and 2.2 million people are going to die. And on and on. So people complied because of the fear, the incredible fear. And then once they got y'all closed down, who's going to be brave enough to open up? Now, we had that woman in Texas. She's a hero, the salon owner. She opened up. She went to jail. Then that was thrown out, thank God. But it's been my contention all along that every business owner should say, we're opening on this day. This is the day we're opening, and that's it. The problem is, very few people, and you know this, because you're a leader yourself, very few people are leaders that are willing to take the heat.
Right.
So who's going to stand up and organize this thing?
And there it is. Thank you. That's it. Who is going to organize this? We need people like you, which was kind of the one of the reasons why when I was talking with Kevin out of New Hampshire, he says, man, Dr. Berman. And I said, I know who he is. And he said, you got to have him on because, you know, he's right on the money. And, hey, are you volunteering for that position? Because I really think we need a spokesperson. We need a Martin Luther King Jr. out there to go say, you know what? I'm using him as an example. Maybe that's inappropriate, but nonetheless, an example. To gather the masses, because I think we need to do that. Otherwise, there's going to be bloodshed, I think.
Oh, no doubt. I've always been willing to lead. I have no problem with that. I'm not afraid. If any people ask me to lead, I'll lead.
Okay.
The problem is not whether I'll lead. The problem is whether people want to be led.
That's another issue. Do people want to be led?
Let me give you an example. So I was preaching at the State House, I said, right? Some people came to me afterwards, and they said, this is about an hour away from where the church is. Fanates came to me after, and they said, these are people in the audience, some of them. He said, you know, Pastor, we have not been in church in 2 months, and we really want to go to church, and you're having church tomorrow. Where are you? I said, I'm an hour away. He said, we think it's great and amazing, and you have enough guts to stand up there, and you might be arrested. I said, I'm willing to do it. It's not the end of the world. He said, how far is your church away? I said, about an hour. He said, that's kind of far. I thought to myself, I didn't say it to him, but I thought to myself, so you're encouraging me to get arrested, which I'm, you know, happy to do if I must, but you won't drive an hour to come to a church service.
Exactly.
To stand with me. Yeah. So you see, the sheep want the shepherd to do all the work. And as you know, the Bible tells us that the shepherd was given to train the sheep how to do the work. So if I have people around me that want me to lead, if I have pastors that call me, want me to lead, I'll definitely consider it because I, you know, whatever God calls me to, I'll do. But most pastors don't want that. Most pastors want to just, you know, kind of get through and not be cause any ruffle, any feathers. Now, I know preachers get really mad when I say this, but prove to me it's not true.
Good point.
Prove to me it's not true. Prove to me when you look at the Barna statistics, you prove to me it's not true. Barna's a very good researcher, and you want to be totally shocked and maybe depressed a little bit. Read Barna's research on the American church. You'll find out. I mean, guys like me are really, really looked down on. I'm telling you, I am very looked down on.
Well, you speak. You're right, and that's why we like you. We love you here. Our audience loves you. I mean, again, the favorable comments. You speak out against everything that's wrong. I mean, look, if it's biblically wrong, you say so.
Right.
And you're not afraid to say so. And I'm glad you do that. By the way,
I don't know why you would be.
Well, because, you know, I believe this to be the case. And by the way, Reverend Dr. David Berman is my guest. Christian Life Fellowship Church. That is clfchurch.com. Look at it there on your screen. He's written a book. I think you wrote a book like 10 years ago, didn't you?
I wrote a few books over the years. One was called Wake Up and Smell the Truth. One was called Essays in Liberty. And one was my dissertation on the book of Romans.
Okay. In fact, the links, they're still in print, correct? On Amazon, via Amazon?
I think you probably can get them used. You probably get them used. And I think the old one is not in print anymore.
Okay. I was looking at that because I had notes from the previous show, and I was looking at that and I thought, man, I want to ask him off air. And of course I didn't talk to you off air. So anyway, but again, folks, clfchurch.com. That's where to go and follow on Twitter and Facebook. But we need more than that. We need to actually be engaged. And that's what you're saying. And you're willing to lead. What do we do? As a church, as a people, as a nation, I think there's different, and forgive me for making this harder than what it should be maybe, but I think there's different roles to play here. As a business owner, as a citizen, you know, I think we all have different roles, and different levels of leadership.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, I think the reason though, there's a lot of churches that don't stand up is they are afraid to lose their 501c3 status, and they're afraid.
Who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Who cares?
Yeah.
But if the government, does the government monitoring your show?
I know non-governmental agents are.
So my name is Pastor David Berman, and I don't care about your stupid tax exemption.
Okay.
I will speak the truth anyway. You figure if you're watching.
And that's what we need.
I will speak the truth anyway.
That's good. Okay. All right. See, and thank you for that. And folks, to those who do transcribe the programs, and they do, make sure you get that right. You get that correct. Especially if you're going to send that to our attorneys and such, you make sure you get that correct.
I'm just going to preach the word of God, and I'm going to speak whatever I want to speak from the pulpit because I have a First Amendment right given me by Almighty God. Amen. It's not for sale. It's not for sale. I don't lose my rights when I walk in to the church, nor do I lose my rights by having reverend in front of my name. And I have every right. And in fact, I want you to know, according to the tax code, you don't need a 501c3 to be tax exempt. Because we're not tax exempt. We're tax immune.
There you go.
We don't belong to the government.
Yeah.
Yep. We don't listen to the government. We listen to the word of God and the leading of the Holy Ghost. We don't care what any president says or any leader says if they try to tell us how we're supposed to practice our faith or what we're supposed to say. I will say whatever I want to say, whenever I want to say it, wherever I am.
Exactly. And you should be applauded for that. And I think that's what's needed. What's going to be our line in the sand? In your view, look, we, in a sense,
if this isn't the line in the sand, what is it? What is?
But you know, weren't we having this discussion? It was around the time of the Obergefell decision. Weren't we having this discussion about homosexuality becoming a law? That, hey, we can't allow this. And then right. It was something else, and it was something more. And so I is it going to be vaccinations? When, yep. You know, what is?
Oh my gosh. Forced vaccinations.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that somebody thinks they have a right to hold you down and stick a needle in your arm? You ain't going to do that to me.
No.
No. And I will use my Second Amendment right if I must to defend myself. You ain't putting a needle in my arm.
Yep. And somebody had I just saw this on one of the message boards for the seriously, the communists in this country. They call themselves Democrats. But somebody has said, look, we're not going to accept your vaccinations, and I will defend my family with force if necessary, deadly force if necessary.
Right.
And oh, that's my right. Goodness, you should have seen the response to that. And them saying, the commenter saying, well, he should be arrested. He should be, he should have his guns taken away. That's a terroristic threat and stuff. And I'm watching this if we don't change things peaceably, it's going to come down to a very bloody mess.
There's no doubt there's a civil war coming. There's no question in my mind, because you have a culture that is completely divided between one worldview and one completely different worldview. And history tells us, and this is why the lie that's been happening to multiculturalism has happened for so long. Oh, diversity is our strength. Diversity is not our strength. Unity is our strength. And what I mean by unity is unity philosophically. I don't care what your race is, color your skin. It makes no difference to me. I love everybody. But the people used to come to America with this mindset. They'd say, you know, I'm Italian, I'm Jewish, I'm African, whatever I might be. But I want to come to America because I want these principles of liberty. We're all going to rally around the constitutional principles. And you can believe what you want. You can practice your little cultural thing or whatever. You got your cultural clubs. Whatever. Nobody cares. Do what you want. But we all rally around this sense of free enterprise, freedom, personal property rights, personal responsibility, First Amendment, Second Amendment, and on. But now we're told diversity is our strength, and diversity has been our weakness.
Exactly.
Not racially, philosophically. So philosophically, diversity is our weakness. And now we have one side of the country that believes in socialism and big government, big daddy, and are a bunch of bootlickers. And the other side of this country is saying, well, hold on a minute. I want to be the master of my own destiny from the standpoint of working and building a business and raising my family and inculcating the word of God into my family. And you've got a group of people that are telling you, you're going to comply with what we tell you to say, how we tell you to act, and we're going to call you a terrorist if you want to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's right.
So either we have a great awakening in America where the church wakes up, and that real great awakening spills out of the church onto the streets, and we have a great awakening. People come to Christ. We either do that, or we're going to have a civil war eventually. I'm not saying I want one. I'm just saying history teaches us this. At some point, it's going to get violent, and people are going to fight because you're coming to a point where you cannot compromise on issues like forced vaccination, on issues like forcing the church to close down.
Right.
Issues like socialism and the takeover of healthcare, the takeover of everything by the federal government. At some point, you're going to say, I've had enough of this. And people are not going to put up with it anymore. And I think we were close to that before Trump got elected. I think many people in the heartland were just, they had enough.
I agree. And I think the ideological divide has been so exacerbated. As I was thinking over this weekend about how just about this year in general, this past all of 5 months, and what we've seen with the population, how the population has been so exquisitely, and I use that word purposely, divided by something we can't see, we can't smell. Supposedly we can feel when we get it, you know, that being the virus, Chinese Communist Party virus. And what it's done to this country, it's really exacerbated and really, it's really made the divide, the ideological divide, so much greater. But the response by the government. And so that leads me to believe, or that leads me to question, well, wait a second, if that's, I don't think they could have created something, again, more exquisite to as a pathway or as a method. I shouldn't say pathway, but a method to create and make the divide worse and to create this, this public animosity, you know, between, somebody who doesn't wear a mask and somebody who says, yeah, you gotta wear a mask, you know, or whatever that case might be. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it's quite brilliant on the part of the devil.
Yeah, it is.
Because when you think about it, you know, how do you go and organize protests if people are all scared to death to go outside?
Yeah, precisely.
How do you run for office against the left in this country if you can't have political rallies? You can't have your candidates out there visiting and meet and greet and speaking with people personally. You know, on these congressional elections, governor elections, these more local elections, you know, politicking is meeting people and speaking with them and having rallies and answering questions. And you can't do that right now because everybody's afraid to go out. So it's a perfect storm. When you tank the economy like we've done, 30 million jobs. I mean, I don't think anybody understands how awful this is and what the ramifications are. Then you have a bunch of people that are standing in food lines, are desperate. They're going to do whatever you say because they're desperate to survive.
Right.
I mean, this is an awful scenario. And the way, and you know, I have always been a very strong supporter of, in general, of the policemen do a tough job. But the way I'm seeing police, and I don't want to broad brush, I don't mean every policeman, please, if you're a cop and listening, I'm not against you. But the things I have seen police doing is, it's appalling.
Yeah.
Totally crapping all, and I use that nerd word on purpose, crapping all over their oath of office. They're not servants anymore. They're servants of the king. They should say no to illegal orders. You take an oath before Almighty God and you say no to illegal orders. And don't give me this garbage about, well, I have a family to feed and I'm going to lose my job. Well, then lose your job and be a man of honor instead of enforcing things that are unconstitutional on people. You took an oath.
Because everyone who felt that way would not, I guarantee you, you would not lose your job, so to speak. You would not,
exactly.
It just wouldn't happen that way. And that's the problem we have. One person, you get tossed in jail and fined. Two people, five people, whatever. Yeah, the media gets called. You get a whole bunch of people and they're overwhelmed. Yeah. We can win on the numbers alone. As Christians, as conservatives, we can win on the numbers alone. You know, Dr. Berman, I really want to have you back. I really do, in the future. And because I think that you and I and all of our audience, everyone listening and viewing right now, I think that we together can come up with certain plans of action, that we could actually make work. I really do. I wouldn't say that if I didn't believe it. What do you think? Do you think that as we go into the summer, and especially because this is an election year, and it's going to be pretty volatile, you think that we can fight back effectively if we get together?
Yeah, the challenge is the get-together part. The challenge is, first of all, you have to have a leader. This is my personal opinion.
Right.
You can't have 45 people leading something. You have to have a person that leads. And then you have to have some leaders around that person that will stand with that leader. And you have to have a coherent understanding and message and specific actions. And that takes also resources to be able to do that. So these are the two challenges. You need a leader. You need people that are around that man. And then you need financial resources to be able to actually hold rallies and do the things that you need to do to make a difference. And without those three things, you can't do anything. And what the government knows is this. This is, you know, just as an analogy. If I get you get a bad guy with a six shooter, he's only got six rounds. You got 100 people that he's holding hostage. They could overwhelm him easily, but nobody wants to be one of the six that gets shot. Sure. So nobody overwhelms him. So what ends up happening is they all get shot.
Right.
because once he shoots the six, everybody's scared and he has time to reload. My analogy is this, that they're going to destroy us if someone is not willing or if some people are not willing to stand up and take the heat. Precisely. But very few are. Very few. And I will tell you, you are not welcome today if you're a pastor saying the things I'm saying. They don't want you to be involved in any kind of church leadership in any denomination if you're like I am. They don't want you to say the things you're saying because it causes them problems. It upsets the apple cart. They don't want you to say these things because you're so wrong and you're so unchristlike. I hear this one. It's not Christlike. I'm like, which Christ are you talking about? You know, they crucified him because of what he said.
That's right.
I don't know which Jesus they're talking. What do they think? Everybody loved Jesus?
That's a good point. I really don't know what
insane.
People think. When you talk to a mainstream Christian, whatever you want to call them, I wonder myself what they believe. You know, did they believe that everyone thought that, you know, everyone liked Jesus? Like you said, I don't think so. I don't think that was the case.
Because they believe that a pastor is supposed to be loving, and they define loving by accepting everything and anything all the time. And when a pastor says, I'm sorry, that's not biblical, you're being unloving and judgmental. And it's one thing when you hear that from the world, but you hear a lot from the church people, not my church people, but a lot of church people, because they bought this lie about the feminist lie. They bought the gay lie. They bought all this stuff and they think, oh, you're not being Christ-like. You have to be soft, because they think Jesus was this little man walking around with his hands like this and sandals, never upsetting anybody, not making a whip and driving them out of the temple and calling the people broods of vipers. And calling them snakes and foxes and everything else that he called them.
Right.
And they don't, oh no, Jesus never did that. Well, if you want to be Christ-like, then you stand up for what's right. You speak truth to power like he did to the Pharisees. You rebuke them when you must. And according to Ephesians, you expose evil.
Which we're doing, and we must do en masse. We must do with leadership, like you said, too, because you can't have, you know, just this untethered group of people. I mean, you can, but it's certainly not that effective.
It's not.
We are going to have to get together, and again, if with your permission, let's get together.
Anytime, brother.
On the air.
Anytime.
Okay. And we're going to work this out together as Christians and as Christian conservatives. Dr. and Reverend David Berman, Christian Life Fellowship. That is clfchurch.com. And you can, Twitter and Facebook both. I'll put the links in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com.
Yeah.
Any preference?
Yeah. Get me on Twitter. Get me on Facebook.
Okay.
And send me an email right up, Dr. Dave, DRDAVE at clfchurch.com. Send me an email. You want me to speak? You want me to talk out? You want to interview me? Whatever. I'm here to fight.
I want to have you back soon, though, because we have to continue this discussion, if that's all right. All right.
Anytime, brother. Anytime.
All right. This is, thank you very much again, Reverend Dr. David Berman, clfchurch.com. If you're anywhere near Swansea, New Hampshire, seriously, attend his services. Contact him. Say, how can I help? Put me to work. You're listening to the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. It's going to be right back. Stay right where you're at. And welcome back to this Tuesday edition of the Hagman Report. It is the 26th day of May. How many people out there think it's Monday? I know you do. I know here in America, where we celebrated Memorial Day, where we remember those who have fallen in battle and gave the ultimate sacrifice, of course. How many people really thought about the real reason for Memorial Day? You know, it's important that we do so and keep that in mind. It's really not a celebration. It's a, it's a memorialization more than anything. You know, if you've got a lot of time on your hands, some people still have a lot of time on their hands. Hey, take a look inside your wallet. And when you do, look at your credit cards. How many do you have? 5, 4, 3, 6? You know, I'm telling you something. When you look inside your wallet and you take account of your credit cards, you're going to find, I can just about guarantee this, that you're paying more in interest than you need to. End of story. Simple as that. Folks, you can refinance your debt today with a credit card consolidation from LightStream. And I got to tell you, we did this here at the Hagman household, as well as the business, to restructure our debt, because, you know, you buy something from, oh, I don't know, B&H Photo, you buy something from, I'll say Best Buy or whatever. You know, it, I'm telling you, the aggregate interest rate you're paying is just incredibly high. So I would urge everyone to check out lightstream.com/Hagman, because here's why. You can quickly roll balances from multiple credit cards into one single monthly loan payment. Sometimes it just makes perfect sense to do so. And you can get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with auto pay, much lower than the national average credit card rate of over 19% APR. And there are absolutely no fees. The application, well, that process is very quick and easy, 100% online. You could even get your money as soon as the same day you apply. Here's what you need to do. Here is what you need to do. You apply today to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. And let me just say this. I got an email, okay, from another listener, another viewer, who said, I went to LightStream online. I had all of my credit card balances written down, my payments, my interest rates. And I'm paraphrasing now. This is from Judith. And Judith, thank you for this. And she lives in Texas. And she said that right now she is saving over $230 per month. And her interest rate is, as they say, 5.95% APR. That's the annual percentage rate with auto pay. So she said, I want to thank you very much for introducing me to lightstream.com. And yes, I did use Hagman as the code, /Hagman as the code. But here's what you need to do. Apply today to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. And remember, there's two N's on Hagman. In fact, I'll spell it for you. It is lightstream.com/Hagman, H-A-G-M-A-N-N. This is subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. And you'll be glad you did, and you're going to thank me later. You will. All right. If it's Tuesday, as today is, then it's Tuesdays with Stan. Stan Dale from standale.com. And I saw a somewhat popular, Stan, I didn't tell you this off air. I saw a somewhat popular message board, survivalist, I don't know what you would call it, message board, talk about you and linking to your website and linking to your various times with hosts, me included, yours truly included. So I wanted to tell you that. I won't name the message board. I can do that quietly. But nonetheless, I thought, wow, you know, people wondering, you know, where's Stan Dale? How's he doing? And, of course, remembering you from the days, the Art Bell days, and remembering you from 15, 20 years ago, and also talking about your book, Cosmic Conspiracy, as well as Holly's book, Dare to Prepare. Both books, by the way, go to standale.com. Very important works in my view. As well as something new or newer, and that is the EMP Shield. If you haven't done so already, EMPShield.com/Hagman, right, Eric? Is that right? Yes, it is. See, he's flashed that right on the screen. EMPShield.com/Hagman for $50 off. Let me tell you this. You need this to protect the electronics inside your home in the event of an EMP of any source, whether it is a enemy EMP, a sun EMP, a interruption, that kind of in power, because your devices will be protected inside your home. So when the power comes back on, the power grid comes back up, you will not have suffered any damage. You know, if you spend $10,000 on I'll just say a Generac generator, for example, or $5,000 or whatever it might be, you're going to want to protect those investments that you make. And if you've got thousands of dollars of computer equipment, you're going to want to protect your investments. Plus, you're going to want the convenience of coming back online as soon as possible. So go to EMP Shield, empshield.com/Hagman. There you can receive $50 off. Stan, I know that you've been waiting patiently there. I want to just welcome you to the show and ask you how your weekend was. Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, it was busy. We were working in the gardens and trying to figure out ways to shield them a bit so that the UV doesn't continue to burn the leaves to pieces. We're at 5,000, well, about a mile altitude here, 5,285, like that. And, of course, the higher you go, the thinner the atmosphere and the more the UV damages things. And I'm just we got two zucchinis, I think, in one squash that actually pollinated when I went out with the toothbrush. We're hoping it'll get better when we put some shielding up. But when we had our monthly chat on our Patreon channel, one of the ladies there said she was having the same exact problems, you know, with the UV, and so she's putting up 40% shielding as well. We did that, and we killed a bunch of moths. We've got the moth plague here like crazy. It's the worst in 10 years, maybe more. It's just huge. Every night we have to kill about 25 to 40 of them with that light trick I talked about here last week, or week before last, I guess, where we put a dish of soapy water underneath the kind of conic-shaped light. We put it on the dining room table. In the morning you get up and you'll have 25 to 40 floaters in there that just dived into the water. We've stood there and watched them. I did it this morning, in fact, when I first got up. I went over and stood by the whole apparatus. And a moth suddenly decided to fly off the ceiling and went straight past me and dived into the water and killed himself. I have no idea why. It must have just scared him. But anyway, yeah, crazy stuff. So that's what we were doing. And we actually had some time off somewhere in there. We took a few hours off. But I've been having trouble with my system again. When they update your software, you know, your system software, things don't always work right. And so it killed my Skype. It's why we're going to Zoom with you guys today. So there'll be a few problems. And wasn't able to update all of our show images page items. You can see the photos there, but the page numbers and the some of the links aren't there. So I'm going to have to kind of fumble through it when I want to talk about something and find the link and then talk to you about it. So
we'll work through it. You know, not everyone can be as lucky to have a guy like Eric, like I do, you know, a son-in-law and a tech all in one, and a handyman and a father, husband, and a good provider for my daughter. So anyway, thank you, Eric, by the way. All right.
Hey, all right. Now let me just see here. Can we pull that off? One of the things I'd like to talk about is that we're at SpaceX. You know, they're going to launch tomorrow the first two astronauts from a civilian launched vehicle. And, on my show images page, probably about, halfway down, maybe more, it'd be, let's see, 43, 47, 51. It might be at 50. Astronauts and wives and things, and you can click on that and it'll take you to a picture that I compiled showing the astronauts and their wives. The two guys are married to two former astronauts for NASA, two women. You know, I had to specify that these days, but I show pictures and names of their wives and their former NASA missions. And then these two guys that are going up tomorrow, Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley. In my opinion, these guys are really, really brave because even though the test run of the escape capsule, in case something goes wrong in the launch, the test run of the missile itself, and test run of communications, various other things, all that seemed to work well late last week, I think it was. And so NASA gave them the go-ahead to go ahead and try the mission. But, one good test run to me is kind of thin. You know, I'd like to see more, but, these guys, as I say, they're test pilots, they're formally trained, so they know the risks. And, wow. good luck to them. I looked at the way they're doing this, and I do applaud SpaceX for doing it this way. NASA, of course, had fuel restrictions because of weight and various other things and strength of their rocket to launch the Apollo 11 series or Apollo series. So when the Apollo astronauts returned to Earth, they had to use a heat shield and come in at 17,000 miles an hour and burn off their energy as heat, throwing it off like crazy and hoping that the chutes opened and the heat shield worked and all that kind of stuff. But if you looked at the old-timey space movies and sci-fi movies that we had in the 50s and 60s, you saw that, you know, they pictured a rocket coming home and landing on tripods and fires its retro engines and lands very graciously. It doesn't have all this heat shield stuff. Well, SpaceX is doing that. And so they've got, with their escape capsule, something goes wrong in the launch and the main rocket is in problem, explodes or whatever. There's an instantaneous thing that just kicks off the capsule and it has its own rockets. And it's much better than the Apollo thing that they had, which had a single rocket. You know, hopefully they got off of the launch pad. But this one is really cool. It shoots up at 2 to 2.5 times the speed of sound away from the blowing up part of the missile and goes into an arc and then slows down with its retro engines. It's got its own retro engines to land with. Parachutes or drogue chutes come out first to really slow it down, and then parachutes come out once the retro engines have slowed it down enough. And they could land very safely just by parachute. The docking with and things like that is done with the jets, you know, that are inside the capsule. This capsule, as I say, and the actual missile itself can be reused. And this is just so cool because it reduces the cost of it, of sending payloads up to orbit and back. The astronauts themselves sit in a nice, tidy little capsule. It's really pristine. You look at it and have all the gizmos hanging off of it, you know, the connectors and hoses and that kind of stuff and a bunch of switches. The control panels are like modern LED and LCD screens across in front of these astronauts, and they're made so that the astronauts have special gloves like that are like fingers, because you can touch the screen and get things to happen. And there's no joystick to steer, you know, to land with, that kind of stuff. It's all done with, you know, virtual screens and iOS systems where, you know, they steer it and do all kinds of stuff by touching screens. And it's just so cool. I mean, it's really high tech, and I like that. One of the things that I would like to see them do, and I did talk with some of their team over there at SpaceX so last year, trying to get them to let me help them show how to reduce a lot of the fuel requirements by, you put like one of my inventions, an entrainment drive collar on the missile, and you can actually recirculate your wake, portions of it, so that you're not having to continually fight the drag ahead of you. It's called an entrainment propulsion system. Of course, they didn't want to do that. They'd already started developing this other thing, so that's fine. And after a while, you know, a few months, I looked back at SpaceX and I looked at it and I thought, wow, what do they call their spacecraft? It's a dragon craft. Draco, dragon. And I thought, gee, what a strange name for a space program, you know, for, you know, this missile and for the capsule. And I started to look up, you know, Elon Musk, and didn't exactly see a lot of Christian references in his bio or any. And I'm wondering, goodness gracious, you know, why would he call this thing the name of Satan, you know, the dragon? And then I thought, right, he's being funded by billions, you know, $2.5 billion of dollars to develop this alternate space technology to get us up there cheaper, which he is doing, but it's still thrust rockets and brute force getting us up there rather than gradually getting up into orbit, you know, slower. So you don't have all this danger and stuff with these entrainment collars and stuff that just lift you up into orbit slowly. And I think, right, when this happens tomorrow, let's assume that it works well and, you know, nobody dies, no explosions happen. Then people will say, wow, okay, Elon Musk's system works. It's the height of human technology now. You know, still a rocket, you know, a crude rocket, you know, brute force to get up there. No anti-gravity, nothing like that. And we'll all be going, wow, look at this. Has, you know, mankind is really surging ahead here, which lays the groundwork for the great alien deception I've been talking about for years. Because if this is the epitome of our space technology, and it works, and we see, you know, UFOs the size of a city, you know, 1 or 2 miles in diameter appearing over our cities in an orbit, we're not going to think that, wow, they're Earth-made. These would definitely be aliens, and they would definitely be way ahead of the curve in technology. And, you know, our technology is primitive, even the best things we've got now, you know, compared to these things. And so I think it's just accenting the fact that this is the best we could do. We're, you know, pushing the envelope, and here come guys that are millennia ahead of us in technology, which, in my opinion, are followers coming from, you know, Satan and his crew.
Agreed.
And these things called Draco or Dragon, and I just kind of like a red flag to me. All this is a worry.
Very interesting. And folks, thank you for putting up, and Stan, thanks for putting up the putting up with the overlap. I know there's a little bit of lag and overlap in our conversation. I don't want to do that, or I don't want to mess you up. But yeah, very interesting and very disconcerting at the same time. So here's my question: is this a NASA initiative that is partnered with the private Musk, you know, Elon Musk people, or is this a private initiative that is assisted by NASA, or is there no, I mean, or are they two separate things?
No, they are together. The funding they got is under the administration of NASA, and NASA space director had to be there for the tests, you know, last week, testing all the systems, and until he wrote it, you know, checked it off and said, okay, they couldn't launch because NASA has the overview of that. And NASA helped with the design of the engines for this, you know, SpaceX reusable, missile. So yeah, they're thoroughly in bed together. And, it was a good idea. I mean, technologically speaking, because NASA could then share, you know, what they learned from their mistakes with SpaceX so that they didn't occur again. SpaceX isn't the only one doing it. On the same line on my show images page there with the SpaceX astronauts and wives and the link to SpaceX and all that is a picture of Orbit, Virgin's Orbit aircraft. And Virgin is trying to do a space launch program for private citizens as well. You can click on that and have a look at it. And Space Force, you know, the newly formed Space Force, which is kind of a way to consolidate all of our space activity, you know, as far as going into and warfare and that kind of stuff. They have launched their actually second, it says first, but they've launched their second space shuttle type thing, which is really not manned. It's a much smaller, compact thing, and they put something up into orbit. We don't know what. It's all classified, but you can see a link to that in their control room there, right next to the orbit thing and the Elon Musk thing. Okay. Keep an eye on that tomorrow and see what happens.
All right.
We are seeing more UFO sightings in Connecticut. There were quite a few of them, more than average. Look at the UFO reports, and you'll see that we're going to be having our attention turned to looking for smart, friendly aliens out there. I have a link to that at slide 61 on there, and also at slide 44, an analysis of whether these aliens, if we do see them, are going to be friendly, and could we handle such a thing? And a very good question. But anyway, all these thoughts are turning the minds of the people of Earth to wonder if they're there, and we're getting closer. And you can see, like on Discovery Channel, some of their latest releases and things are showing that, well, we could have maybe 25 Earth-like civilizations, you know, within 1700 light years of us and things like that. All this talk is raising our consciousness, our awareness to Are they there? You know, are they friendly? Can they help us? And you say, well, can they help us with what? Well, when you look at grapefruit sized hailstones that go through ceilings and houses, which, you know, they're doing, you know, you think, well, okay, it might be a good time to figure out ways to deal with the superstorms we're having. Hailstones bigger than grapefruit pummel a North Texas town on Friday, punched holes through roof and left craters in the ground where they impacted. Now, these are only, what, maybe 3-4 pounds worth of ice. When the Bible talks about, you know, 51 pound, you know, chunks of ice coming down, I don't know how that would be, but I'll guarantee it would be because of super storms on the planet, super thunderstorms. And with the biblical forecast of the sun's light, visible light going 7 times brighter than normal, there's going to be heat associated with that. I don't know that the infrared is going to be 7 times greater, but the visible light will be. And I think there will be an accompanying increase in heat on the planet. Heat into our system from the sun drives the weather machine. And it's going, something like that is going to drive horrendous weather machines during the tribulation period, but, you know, not now. But we're seeing the things lining up so that we can have fulfillments of the prophecies with the sun and various environmental things in the Revelation of John. You can have a look at that and see and just kind of get an idea how they form. They're a bunch of smaller hailstones that clump together at high altitude. You know, they get warm and then they freeze together and form these big balls. That's what's coming there. We had an asteroid pass close to us here. Let me see if I can find that here. Okay, asteroid passes Earth in one of the closest flybys ever recorded. And the reason is because we have communications and geostationary GPS satellites out at about 25,000 miles off the Earth's surface. This thing came right down into that 25,000 mile distance, right into where those asteroids are located. So if we have a shotgun effect of asteroids, which nobody knows about until they get here because they can't see them in visible light, this might be problematic for our communications, our cell phones, computers, warfare, you know, communications with our troops and instruments and all that kind of stuff.
I'm going to tell you, Stan, if I lose the TV Land channel, people are going to pay. Asteroids are going to pay. I'm kidding, of course. But no, it's something on your show images page, folks. Go to standeo.com, standeo.com. Again, the link will be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. I'm looking at the image of this one. This is in addition to the one you spoke about, I think, a week or two ago, right? This is...
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, actually, let's see. Yeah, it was last week, but last time I was with you was week before last, I think, wasn't it?
And, that's right.
Let's see. How big was it? It's about 8 meters. That'd be about 25, 26 feet in diameter, but still enough to hurt if it actually impacted the Earth or if it exploded at high altitude like that one over Russia a couple years back. You know, one thing, you know, about war interests me here with China. There's an article I have, third row down. I forget the number of it, but it shows a red Chinese flag in the little box that you link to. If you get to the article, it's on Breitbart. It says, exclusive, concerns over China fueled Pentagon warning on DNA kits. And you think, what? Why is the Pentagon interested in our DNA test? It's because China has the ability to create viruses that target certain types of DNA and not maybe Chinese, but more, you know, European DNA or African DNA. And so Trump was saying, you know, let's don't give our military guys DNA into some database that can be hacked by the Chinese, because they can actually probably target, you know, certain leaders or something if they can get them from their DNA profile on these DNA sites, and, you know, release a bug that doesn't hurt the troops, but it hurts the leaders, or it hurts, you know, President Trump. But that's why these DNA things, the White House said, don't do it. if you're military, because you're giving the enemy a way to kill you just by your DNA. Isn't that incredible that they're being that specific now and doing that?
You know, yes. The short answer is yes. And I'm going to give you just wait like, I don't know, 5 seconds before you start talking again. My apologies, folks. Again, the communications are a little bit rough today. But, you know, I noticed that the Chinese, just very quickly here, the Chinese have Wu Ji Healthcare Ventures, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, merging with Chinese political, the Communist Party political interests as well. Not that specific one, but that merged with another company, but nonetheless. So you're seeing this, this molding and melding, I guess would be more appropriate, of these initiatives. And yeah, I mean, so you're right. I guess that's all to say that you're right. I would be very concerned about giving my DNA, in this fashion. Well, for any reason, but specifically where the Chinese can grab it, or anyone can grab it.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm hoping I'm waiting enough time to not.
Yes.
You know, there's another article there at the top of three, like boxes there on our show images page. It says, do America and Iran stand on the brink of war? And, certainly they are approaching the point where they'll start throwing, you know, missiles at each other. It's an interesting article. The problem with the elections over there with Netanyahu being tried in court over alleged, graft or quid pro quo type behavior with some companies overseas, you know, it's really silly. It shouldn't even be an issue, but their left wing over there trying to take him down in the middle of a situation where Iran and possibly Saudi Arabia are against Israel, are about to lob nuclear missiles at them. This is, I think, one of the reasons that the United States pulled out some of their support in Saudi Arabia at the moment for aerial, for getting any attacking drones or missiles and taking them down. They're withdrawing that support and some of our troops out of Saudi Arabia. So, we're being at odds with them and hence with Mohammed bin Salman. But all these things do indicate that we're on the brink of Israel having to attack Iranian missile depots and troop emplacements before Iran hits them. And of course, if that does happen, it'll probably be a nuclear strike, maybe in Damascus, over in Syria, where Iran has some of its troops and weapons emplacements. But we're so close to that. If that happens, people are going to have to start looking at, not only Iran, how do we stack up with Iran? Like our military ranking on the military ranking sites, U.S. military is first in the world. Iran is 14th, way down the totem pole. But China and Russia are up higher than that. So if China and Russia side with Iran, United States could be in real trouble. The invasion that the Hopi talked about with us.
It seems like we are getting closer and closer to that. And it seems like it's not just one issue that we're looking at, watching, tracking, for example, the virus situation, and then separately from that, the response, and then third from that would be the backlash to the response, and then now we're seeing geopolitically, as you said, Iran and of course China and Russia, not a good situation, and then the instability with the our Israeli government. All of these we have to take into account. And when you overlap today's headlines with the biblical prophecy, we can see in a sense where we're at. So I think this is not unrelated to what you said earlier about the, SpaceX and that, all of that. Wow. It's just incredible.
Yeah. Oh, I know. There's just a lot going on. It's a very confusing world with the environmental changes, with the political and economic and illness related type thing, pesticides or pests. You look at slide 60 here, where you've got a picture of a guy there with shadow pictures of guys raising their weapons in the air. And who this guy is Brigadier General Abdulaziz Shalahi, and he's the replacement for Soleimani. He's picked up the mantle for the Quds Force, and, you know, he's been responsible for part of the drone attacks back on our troops after we killed Soleimani. So keep an eye on him, link to that site and have a look at it and see the bio of this guy, who's probably the one we'll be facing in charge of the Iranian attacks on Israel and the United States, should those happen. And I think they will, or they're going to try anyway. And when Israel makes its attack back, or preemptive attack, this is what this guy here is the one you got to watch and look at his mindset and see how he's going to react on the ground here in the United States and in Israel, you know, with, you know, spies inside our country, you know, deep agents. So this is our new Mohammed bin, our new Soleimani, even though his name isn't Solomon, but he's a guy to watch. Soleimani's been, I guess we're going to have to assume he's dead and not coming back. I waited for him to reappear and be like an Antichrist with the name of Solomon, you know, Soleimani. But it looks like he's gone for real. So we're looking at Mohammed bin Salman. We're looking at, the guy that used to be the number two, the head of internal, affairs for Turkey. What's his name? It's just a second here. I'll find it. Anyway, this guy has resigned from the government. It's, interior minister. He used to be Süleyman Soylu. He is another Solomon, and he's in Turkey, where the seat of the Antichrist government could well be placed, right in the middle of the East and West old Roman empires. So we're watching him, still watching Mohammed bin Salman. That little swine, pardon my French. You know, Mohammed bin Salman is really hurting the United States, hurting other countries too, but he's really dug us, you know, an energy problem. He dug a grave for us there because he's dropped the prices of oil, which is killing some of our dependent shale oil and gas, you know, extraction processes over here. He's doing his best he can to hurt us, you know, energy wise. And he's been buying up, other businesses, you know, like in England, the baseball or the football or soccer team, whatever he's buying. And he's spending money like crazy buying into existing businesses, diversifying himself from the oil industry so that when he wants to, he can cut off the flow of oil, raise the prices. And of course, if our oil producing, companies over here in the United States are closed, you know, because they lost so much money in the COVID-19, you know, situation, it'll take us a while to retool and get back to being able to supply energy at the right price to our own people. And anyway, Mohammed bin Salman is not out of the game. He's definitely turned on the United States and, you know, I know Pompeo realizes that, and so does Trump and President Trump. And we're seeing things start to form up, just like the Hopi prophecies, that China, Russia, and a Middle Eastern nation will actually put troops on the ground and will attack the United States from offshore. A big worry.
You know, Stan, I love history. I love to learn about history, which is kind of funny because when I was in high school, I didn't. But and then you know, subsequent learning from there. But during World War II, we had communist saboteurs in this country, as well as German subs offshore. And in fact, some German military landed in where it was in New York State. It was off of I want to say Staten Island area in that vicinity. I don't recall exactly where. And then the Japanese sent up balloons, if people remember that, that landed over in the Pacific Northwest. Their intent there was to detonate these balloons, cause fires and explosions in the mainland United States using the wind currents. And of course, there were saboteurs, although... Yeah, we responded in kind with camps for the internment camps for the Japanese. So it's certainly not out of the realm of of comprehension that this would be happening today. As a matter of fact, that one would be surprised based on history if it wasn't happening, where we'd have internal people well-positioned inside our country to take us down from within, concurrent with any kind of external invasion or even independent of an invasion like that. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. If you look at the situation of the world at the moment, we've already talked about, you know, threat of war, very clear and present danger. You know, the people of Earth, you know, the major population stuff are probably thinking, can somebody cool these guys off? You know, America, Iran, Russia, China, can we just take a breath and settle down? Can someone help us? So you see that threat of nuclear war and nuclear annihilation is one crisis curve I mentioned in the Cosmic Conspiracy. We see that now clear and present danger. What else do we see? Well, we see Ethiopia. We see India. We see North Africa. We see Tanzania. All these places suffering locust plagues. That's like from the Exodus plagues, you know, in Egypt. And these are, you know, you can see the links on the side. You can see the locust pictures there. There's one poor girl. I think she was in Tanzania region or somewhere in there. And she, you wonder how she can even breathe. There are so many locusts flying around her. She runs for cover. Okay. So we've got locust plagues of these things in various places that are, you know, abnormally large. At the same time, here in the United States, probably central United States and west into the dry areas, we're having a moth, a Miller moth plague. And I've told you about this before. And there's a link there. It shows a moth on a keyboard. To other things that, you know, other reports of these moths in Arizona and how they're getting into the piggeries there and just, you know, polluting everything. And then to the left of that, you'll see not moths or locusts, but you'll see a toxic algae or algal bloom. And, you know, so we've got to deal with that. That algae, is fatal to dogs in three Minneapolis lakes, that green algae, if your dog drinks that water, he'll die. He'll be poisoned or be very sick, one of the two. So we're seeing that as a threat, you know, these biological things, which are like pestilence and things like that. Hurricanes, okay. Hurricanes, we're seeing that the hurricanes are getting stronger. And this is just like the climate models have predicted, but over the last 100 years, we've seen the sunspot activity and the frequencies of light and the intensity of them coming from the sun gradually increase like this. And we're coming up to a point where I really wonder if the sun is not going to do some real damage to people with coronal mass ejections and EMP strikes, you know, against the Earth, because the outer layers are thinning. There's a report on that I discussed earlier, a couple weeks back. So, with that happening, we're going to see more violent weather, and it's no surprise that hurricanes are getting stronger, according to this report. But also, we're going to see more tornadoes, and I think we'll see microbursts coming straight down out of a clear sky sometimes, and with winds up to 200, 240 miles an hour that just cut trees off like a saw went through them, like a scythe, you know, just bang, cut them. So all these things tell us that we're in an age of where the wrath of God is starting to form in small, you know, forms, but it's going to get more serious as time goes, as we get into the actual tribulation period.
Man, you know, you mentioned weather, the severe events, hurricanes, tornadoes, microbursts and such. You know, here where I'm at, Northwest Pennsylvania, I don't know, 10 days ago, 9 days ago, there was a little layer of snow. It wasn't very much, but it was on the ground right now. Yesterday, I think the high was 87, and I think today the high might have been 88. I don't know, but certainly up there. The dramatic changes that we're seeing, it's just, wow. Look, I know we've had these before, and I know the old saying, hey, if you don't like the weather, just wait, you know, 5 minutes, wait 5 minutes, it'll change. But this seems more extreme.
Yeah, it does. I found another article the other day over at Derbyshire in the UK, and It's titled, what is it titled? Toilet Frog Invasion Leaves Derbyshire Townsfolk Scared and Baffled. Frogs were actually coming up through the plumbing into their toilets. And that would be an interesting surprise, I suppose, to most of us to have a frog join us at that time of life. But it's another plague, localized. But I started thinking about what happened in Egypt with the Exodus, and there was a plague of frogs, which came after the locusts and the gnats, the little flies and stuff that just came across the land and was driving everybody crazy. Well, the frogs eat those kind of things, fortunately, but there was a plague of frogs after that. I haven't seen signs of water turning to blood, except one article in in Israel, which was a result of a leakage of a slaughterhouse, you know, the blood net going into a local stream. But other than that, I haven't seen that sign occurring yet. And our firstborn aren't dying yet, which happened during the plague of Egypt. But I'm still thinking there's a lot of parallels that we're seeing with these current plagues that, you know, remind us of what God did to Egypt at that time.
Yeah, again, this weekend, I spent some time and some thought, you know, which I guess I did need to do more of. But when you look at the social things that are taking place on a social level, the ideological differences here of people in the United States, and then you add in everything that you mentioned, you know, here for the last, I don't know, however long we've been on, it seems like things are kind of really gearing up toward some, would it be a climactic conclusion, or would it be sustained?
Well,
go ahead.
Sorry, I forgot to.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
Are we almost out of time?
We've got about 18 minutes, so we're good.
Okay. The series of plagues and things that are like what struck Egypt, and we're saying all this, these are not the tribulation period. These are a prelude, you know, a small sample, which will get us to want to have help from aliens, from, you know, space to help us control our weather and our, you know, insects and all these things that are going wrong. So it's getting people ready to accept an Antichrist under Satan's direction. Oh, and one thing I had not discussed before, there's an article that I found says there is no life after death. Scientists insist afterlife is impossible. And I watched, the links on it, and I read the story about it. And this silly guy, the methods that he uses and the assumptions are all wrong. But it shows you that they're trying to teach people that, look, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You're not going to be here. You'll die. That's all there is. And it's causing people that read that and believe it to kind of lose hope because there's no future. There's no life after this. And the problems they've had in this life, physically and mentally, whatever, are not going to go away. You know, it's just so disheartening to see that, but it is coming from the quote-unquote scientific community of the deep state. And they really want to do everything they can to discourage Christians and Jewish folks, too, who look forward to heaven. And I put it up not because I support what this clown has said, but to show you how bad the attack is by Satan and his minions on us, just trying to take us down.
All of this meant to erode, and maybe erode is too easy of a term, to destroy our faith in our Lord and Savior, in the God of the Bible. I can say not only that, if we don't fear judgment, at least again, this is my view. If we don't fear judgment by God, although we are saved through His crucified through his death and resurrection, but if we don't fear God's judgment of it's going to be, I mean, Wow. To me, that would be a license. If I believed that, that would be a license for me to just do whatever I wanted to do. If it feels good, do it. And if it, against, you know, if it's immoral, what's morality? It'd be akin to a bungee cord, I suppose. You know, holding morals together. Wow. What a mess. Just what a mess we're in right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's terrifying. And this is really just a small taste of what is going to come during the tribulation period, but it's going to be played up enough in the press, I think, to get the people of earth ready for Simon, come help us. You know, that kind of nonsense. And, it's going to be a deception that Jesus spoke of. You know, the threat of war is with Israel being one of the primary catalysts for it. It's getting closer. It says here, one article that I've got there, a link to, that Israel won't miss historic opportunity to annex Judea and Samaria, says Netanyahu. And basically, on July 1st, he starts to annex the West Bank and those properties that were previously kind of controlled by Jordan indirectly. And Jordan says, if you do this, it's a declaration of war. We're coming after you. But, you know, another.
Now that's my fault, but you're convinced that we're, I don't want to say convinced, but you're looking at a definite conflict in the Middle East centered around Israel, whether it be with Iran or in Syria, but you're definitely looking at war taking place there is what I'm getting from you, right? I mean,
my opinion, yes, it's just my opinion based on all these things I've been telling and sharing with you here, and these are news reports. And, you know, position papers as well with, Netanyahu. But, I am pretty sure that we're looking at war, in the Middle East, a limited war. I don't think it'll be World War III, but it will frighten people into thinking that's what's forming. And it will herd us as a race into the hands of a new world order to solve it. But it won't be from any established religion or political system or whatever. It will be allegedly from space, from our elder brothers in space. And this is the beginning of what I've been predicting since 1978 in that Cosmic Conspiracy book. And it's the book that former Secretary of Defense Jim Schlesinger had in the Clinton White House. And he and Clinton were in Australia, and he sent word to me through a civilian, yes, your book And the plan that you've put in there is correct. That's what we're doing. We're going to form a deceptive world government long enough for people to understand that they can get along, but it'll be a dictatorial structure for 7 years. So they're actually looking at that 7 year period. And, I haven't changed my opinion. This is where we're headed. And I think the major catalyst will, the cherry on top of the dessert will be this threat of nuclear war, global nuclear war, starting in the Middle East.
I'm sorry. No, that was my fault. But I do hope that people heard what you just said about Schlesinger. He can't speak. And the confirmation from the information in your book, that's pretty amazing. And look, I know folks, Stan obviously has got some restrictions on what he can say given his previous work, and they don't go away. You know, it's not like, you know, when you get Social Security, you're allowed to talk. No. So, you know, but that was a very interesting statement you made, and I hope people focused in on that or do focus in on that. The fact that, hey, you know, yeah, this is, yep, we're doing it. Go ahead, sir.
Well, Schlesinger, was the guy that let me come back in the country and gave my citizenship back and everything else. And, you know, knowing that I had put that book out and that was my position, he granted me return to the United States and passports for my children and citizenship for my children were worn down and that kind of stuff. I'll have to admit, I was very skeptical. I did want to come home and see my parents because they were getting old and ill. But I was surprised that the plane landed and Holly and I got off and we weren't killed. The plane didn't, you know, blow up. And they're letting me survive knowing that my book is a blueprint there, just an overview of what their plan is. I guess they figured that, you know, 250,000 people reading that book wouldn't be an issue. So I don't know. Weird.
Yeah. I'm trying to picture, and folks, think about this yourself. You write a book that contains the blueprints and you're in communication with the principals and you get on a plane and you're thinking, wow, I'm flying all across the ocean. You know, am I going to land? And those thoughts do cross your mind, I would imagine. But here you are.
Yeah. You know, I've kept talking about it. I guess I haven't gotten a lot of coverage other than just with you guys and, you know, Coast and things like that and our websites. And, well, yeah, a few tens of thousands of people, I guess, that are on our YouTube thing. But that's not enough to tell the whole world out there that, you know, watch out for this. You know, I wish it was, but I've done what I can and you've done what you can. And hopefully people will learn from that and be in the rapture instead of being here. You know, we'll be.
Yeah. From this. Again, I'm sorry. Yeah, I hope so too. But you know, Stan, what really amazes me today, and I use that phrase a lot, maybe to the point of it becoming meaningless. But when I look at people who are told to keep 6 feet apart and, again, you know, circles are of paint are drawn in the grass and people, they go to those circles. They're not prodded by cattle prods. And there's nothing keeping them in these circles, but they're listening to, you know, authority, regardless of its constitutionality. And they're shutting their businesses down and they're wearing masks because, well, they're wearing masks. Hey, it's, well, do they just wear maybe a t-shirt kind of material for a mask that really wouldn't keep out the virus anyway? But, you know, so I'm watching all of this take place. To me, you know, and the resistance to this tyrannical overreach is not what I would expect. So anyway, I don't know why I threw that in there except to say, I don't know why. Back to you, sir.
I know our minds go in so many different directions when we start investigating these news items like this. It's just crazy. Let's see. There's something else. It's a minor issue, I guess, sort of. There's a picture of Earth with little white dots all around it, down about four rows down. And it's about the number of satellites that we've put up around the Earth, and they're just junk sitting around. A lot of them aren't used anymore. They're aging and going out of use. So the way that they're proposing here to reduce future satellite debris, you know, junk sitting up there, is to charge $235,000 U.S. per satellite, which it says would quadruple the value of the satellite industry by 2040. But he says, do that and people will have paid us enough that we can go up there and shoot them down or destroy them. But right now there's an estimated, and that's not an accurate guy, it's an estimated 20,000 objects orbiting the Earth. And you'll see in that picture, there's a very obvious ring forming out of all of these satellites, in the equatorial region. And that's the one we were talking about where you have communication satellites and other things that we rely on as far as communications and military and GPS, that kind of stuff. And that's where we had an asteroid last week come close to, in that same area. So what happens when we have a meteor storm, a bunch of meteors come in? What happens when one satellite explodes or is destroyed in a warfare thing and it puts debris into all kinds of orbits around it, traveling at 17,000 miles an hour or at 35,000 miles an hour in counter orbits? It's going to put the cat amongst the pigeons. It's like turning a shotgun loose on satellites all around it. So this is a serious problem that needs to be addressed. We need to get rid of the junk in orbit The Chinese have thought about it and developed a laser, ground laser, and orbital lasers to target satellites and bring them down, you know, into the atmosphere, and therefore they will burn up, hopefully, and not leave any radioactive waste or, you know, or pathological waste of, you know, pathology of diseases and bugs of waste to come back to Earth. Anyway, it's a serious problem. It's a traffic problem, in orbit around us. And, we need a world government to control all the satellite launches and to control the destruction of the ones that are no longer needed. So here we have a reason to have a world government, another thing that people will say, oh, yeah, well, that'll help us solve that problem. Just one of many problems that we've talked about today. So I just see that just happening, another unit.
Yeah, and folks, understand what Stan just said there. When you leave comments on YouTubers, oh, he's calling for a world government, he's one of them. Understand what Stan just said. All right. You know, and we're not going to have a world government, that's suitable to govern this world, without, again, absent of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. We're not going to have that world government, or at least the one that, we need to have. The words are not maybe 100% accurate there. The only suitable world government would be that kind of government under the, again, when Jesus returns, so end the story. So, don't think he's calling for world government. I just want to head off comments and emails to you, Stan.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Are we close to time yet or not?
Yeah, we got about 4 minutes, my brother. And it's been, by the way, it's been fantastic visiting with you. It's really kind of a, it's nice to chat like this, even though with the communication problems, it's nice to see what you've got. And it's, I missed you last week because of the power issues and, that we had. We had a, actually upgrade here. So, but yeah, so we got about 4 minutes left. Go ahead, sir.
I guess, some of the things I didn't put up there were concerning the Earth's magnetic field and how it's weakened. There are changes coming in our crust, you know, the position of it relative to our spin. I firmly believe that we're going to see the magnetic North Pole affect the terrestrial North Pole, which is, you know, just position wise, and see our surface of our Earth, you know, the thin crust start to shift in various directions. We're watching for it. It hasn't really happened yet, but with the magnetic pole shifting like it is at 35 miles a year, it tells me that there are dynamic changes coming inside the planet, and our magnetic field is our Star Trek shield against cosmic radiation, UV radiation, and it's part of the problem with our plants. And I keep relating a lot of this environmental changes to the sun itself. It's like God's punishment instrument. It can be a blessing or it can be a punishment. And I see this with the thinning of the sun's crust, you know, its outer layers. It's affecting our crust, our magnetic field, and our crops, our animals, and us. These things are, you know, leading up to a really bad tribulation period. We're just getting a taste of it now. But watch the sun. It's the major driver in our weather, our climate, our, you know, disease susceptibility, you know, communications, everything. And electronically, it can destroy all of our electronics on the planet with one real good EMP storm from the sun. So just, you know, folks, look at what we're talking about. Prepare as best you can, but mainly get really close to the Lord and seek his word, you know, and understand why this is happening. And there is a way to be delivered from this and to be protected from it. It's the good news. And all this bad news we talk about is just fulfilling prophecy. So be calm and read these things.
Yeah. And that, I'm glad you said that because that was one of the issues. Well, my goodness, listening to you, meaning this platform or us or whatever, it's hopeless. There's no good news. Well, there most certainly is good news here. And, you know, look at the Bible. That is the manual. That tells us what's going to happen. And the good news is through faith in our Savior, we overcome. And we do live on, contrary to that article that nonsensical article that we, you know, there's nothing after this, which is a bunch of BS. Well, you've done it. We're out of time. So I want to thank you again and thank, Holly as well for all of her work putting up the headlines and taking care of your website. And again, thank you for your time, Stan. I know it's a challenge sometimes when you're flying blind like we did. People don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but, with respect to, you know, the images, but thank you. Thank you for your gift of time and, we'll see you back here next week.
Thank you. And thank you, Eric, for, you know, diving in and helping us with this as well. Next week.
All right, my friend. God bless. All right. Out of time, folks. I want to thank everyone who joined me today. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in this platform. Folks, no matter how hard they try, they're not going to silence the Hagmann Report or your voice. Hopefully we stand. Hopefully you look at us and say, you know what? They're saying what we're thinking. So please do me a couple of favors. Subscribe on YouTube to the Hagmann Report. Tell other friends, tell your friends about it, and also share this on social networking. May God bless. Until tomorrow. Good night.